And we're back here on Cambridge Inside Out. It is still February 4th, 2025. Just talking a little bit about what happened at the most recent city council meeting here. So let me say a little thing. I don't think that there's a whole lot more to be said about things that happened at last night's gathering, last night's meeting, which I'm just not really up to going up to a lot of these meetings. And I've used to be sort of like the season ticket holder, only because of the hostility that was shown me by four city councilors, who I would love to see not be city councilors again. Thank you very much. Back on January 27th, it was when they were sort of pushing through the multifamily housing. There's one person who's actually sort of, I'm not going to give his name here, but I found it sort of interesting. This person who's a regular writer of letters to the council and a person who likes to speak in public comment, I think is out of either East Cambridge or, it's not East Cambridge, either North Cambridge or, out that neck of the woods, maybe West Cambridge. Person who has a condo or a house with a driveway, who actually on next door Cambridge, just flat out said that the only people who should be allowed to own cars in Cambridge are people with driveways. Sorry, I got no driveway. I guess according to, the philosophy of this brilliant person, I should not be allowed to have that. My former Volkswagen buses, Beetles, and now Honda Civic, because I'm just not worthy. Because, luck of the draw, there was no opportunity to have a driveway on this property, nor will there ever be. So I guess I'm just not worthy. Maybe I should have become like a programmer or some other professional who's pulling in 20K, 200K a year so that I can, buy a condo with a nice reserved parking space. I just love it when these, like, these newfound wealth, the nouveau riche of Cambridge, the yuppie, we used to call them the yuppies. The young professionals who now they're, heading into their prime earning years, and they want the entire city to just completely yield to their desires and wishes and needs, and if you just happen to be some schmo like me, it's sort of like, just get out of the way, Robert. We need to get places, right? One other thing that I'm not going to get into the candidate speculation business just yet, but since it is does relate to something I'm about to speak about, which has to do with city charter, there is some rumor going around that those nut jobs of the Democratic Socialists, the same people who had images of people paragliding into Israel on October 8th of 2023, real sweet people. That the that they apparently want to, in spite of the fact that the council special committee of the whole has rejected the notion about having a strong mayor form of government. Apparently the socialists like the idea of having a strong man or a strong woman or strong something. And so they want to the rumor is unverified, of course, that they want to have a ballot question to sort of try and force the issue, which would make it kind of interesting because we're also anticipating a ballot question having to do with the approval of a city charter should the special committee of the whole ever get its act together and put it into a workable form where it can get the the appropriate pre-approvals to actually make it to the ballot. But if the DSA crowd does push it, I can almost guarantee you that it'll be part of a campaign of having a couple of very loud candidates, trying running under the DSA banner. There was a group of them last time here, but I think ultimately all they were ended up being was just feeders for Mr. Sabrina Wheeler. But I think they're feeling their oats, and they think that they can elect two, three seats on the city council, and that they may be a big push to do so. I think it'd be a disaster for the city. But anyway, just be on the lookout. That may be coming down the road here. By the way, one other quick thing from those who care about history, that we had a really great tradition that was somewhat bastardized in the early 1900s, but going back to the 1800s. Of nonpartisanship in municipal elections. There were no political parties, and if you look on the ballot, there's no parties listed. And yet, back in the early 1900s, there were people who were campaigning as Democrats. Sort of they were kind of the political patronage party of the day. And I think when Plan E came into effect, it kind of put a little bit of an end to that move toward partisanship, political partisanship, by that in the sense of political parties. I'm worried a little bit that, with the emergence of slates as sort of a way of doing business, whether it's the ABC slate or the CCC slate or the bike slate. But now it's a little bit more weird, the notion you have something like the Democratic Socialists of America, which purports to be a national party movement, that they would actually have candidates identifying according to a national party. When was the last time you saw somebody saying, "Vote Democrat"? I'm vote Joe Blow. I'm a Democrat running for city council, or a Republican running for city council. It just doesn't happen. But we seem to be sort of slowly but surely scratching or clawing our way back toward a bad situation. At least that's the way I look at it. All right, some other things just sort of mentioning is that, and I think it's a pretty serious stuff. Cambridge is listed as a sanctuary city, whatever that means, really, just basically means local officials sh should not be cooperating with federal officials when it comes to simple things like immigration enforcement. Yes, they should cooperate when it comes to do with criminal enforcement. Of course, then it becomes, I guess, a little word game about what you call criminal or not, I suppose. And then that was amended, and we don't use the word sanctuary city. Maybe if we sanitize it, we call it the Welcoming City Ordinance now. But it's sort of in the news. I think Mayor Wu from Boston is slated to go down to Washington and speak in front of a congressional committee to sort of explain what it means to have Boston be a sanctuary city. I have a strong feeling she's going to get cooked at that meeting. Not that she deserves to be cooked at that meeting, but you think we're in a kind of a hostile period right now. And I wouldn't wish that role to sort of be in front of that committee, any of those committees right now. It's a serious matter. I mean, people are actually reporting that, no matter how you feel about immigration and immigration laws, or the complete inability of this country to actually reform immigration procedures so that people can actually have reasonable paths to citizenships without spending a lifetime in the queue, and our failure to perfect that because of the complete dysfunction of the United States Congress, as well as the presidency, it's kind of put us in a situation where now we've got like a kind of a wild man up there who's just trying to make up the laws as he goes. But anyway, I've heard it said that there are parts of the country now where, there are a lot of people who work in the trades, like roofers, people putting siding on buildings, doing flooring, who may not be documented, and but they still have to go pick up supplies at the Home Depot or wherever. And that there are Home Depots that we're normally expecting to have hundreds and hundreds of people, which are empty because people are afraid to be out and about out of fear of being arrested. I don't think that's a very, very good situation for anybody. But, there we go. Anyway, so we have concerns with Cambridge. We are a welcoming city too, and I think there are people who are probably a bit afraid to go out and about. They're doing their business or can some concerns that, the federal officials will come looking for them. So I don't know how we get past this, but it's certainly worth noting. Another thing that came up us at the January 27th meeting is that, we have these so-called payment in lieu of taxes, or abbreviated pilot agreements, with the major universities. By the way, tonight they're having the town gown meetings with the planning board, even as we speak. They started 8 minutes ago. So quick, turn your TV to the planning board. And apparently, even though it was a 20-year agreement, it was a kind of an opt-out period. We've been working our Harvard agreement just as sort of temporary, sort of a bit of a temporary situation right now. And And hopefully that'll get negotiated, presumably by the middle of this year. I don't think Cambridge should be strong-arming Harvard to just fork over more and more cash, because and I don't know quite what the goal is anyway. I mean, if I'm sort of speculating, I thought, former Mayor Siddiqui is still feeling quite hurt by the fact that her this Rise Up Cambridge program, which was giving out $500 checks for nothing every month, is gonna, when the ARPA funds run out, the program runs out. And I think she and others are desperately looking for some place to keep finding a source for the free money. And by the way, that program, that guaranteed basic income, has had some successes in some places and some spectacular failures in others. You will never hear about the failures here in Cambridge because, we love to cherry pick here. But don't be surprised if somebody's got some notion that somehow Harvard is supposed to, they want Harvard to kick in money into a program like that, so that this way it's not subject to the same constraints that taxpayer money is subject to. They're always up to something, these folks. MIT also has a pilot agreement, and I think that's been a much more solid. It doesn't run out, but it's always subject to some negotiation. One thing that was people have talked about, I remember Marjorie Decker talking about this years ago, and Burhan Azim certainly has pushed it in recent years, was this notion about, right now the city council has this rather odd authority to grant curb cuts or deny them. And every once in a while they use it as some sort of like coercive device, but for the most part, they kind of wish they didn't have to do it. It doesn't seem to really be the place for the council at this point. So, they asked for a legal opinion. They came back, and I think we're probably moving into a direction where this is now, I believe, been pitched to the ordinance committee to maybe, or government operations perhaps, to change things so that most curb cuts can be done administratively, without city council involvement. City solicitor rather wisely recognized that, you do have to have an appeals process. So if you get denied, who do you go to? So they were suggesting that, well, you go back up to the city council. That actually seems like a pretty good idea. So for the most part, unless there's a problem, city council will still be not involved. But I think some people would have them taken out of it entirely. We'll see. There was a bit of a perplexing situation where the continued funding and financial stability of Neville Center Nursing Facility, which is up on the Fresh Pond Reservation campus. They wanted to renegotiate things and do that. And I think they came up with some agreement for sort of an extension, but it's done with a private bank. And I think it was Councillor Nolan took some issue with the fact that the bank was actually making money off of the deal. And I thought, well, that's what they do. When you loan money, you make money off the deal. Otherwise, why would you loan the money, right? Anyway, so that apparently has been resolved, so that the city is, they found a funding mechanism for it. One thing I think I should mention here, only because I don't know, maybe it's a slightly morbid view of things, but when I do read the city council agendas, I always take note of the passing of significant people. And at the January 27th meeting, there were three. I mean, every passing is significant, but people who I personally have interacted with. So one was Robert Travers. It was, Bobby Travers, who everybody knows from Cambridge Schools. He was a school committee candidate this last time as well. Bobby's dad, Robert Travers, who I remember. He's sort of one of those old school Cambridge folks who I think once said to me, said, "Are you from around here?" Which I didn't mind at all, because I wasn't from around there. What the heck, right? And also Matt Tierney, who was a city council candidate some years ago, a real sort of housing pro. His dad, Ted Tierney, passed away as well. So sorry, I think I only met him one time over his house. And then another person who was, I think, was really a major name in Area 4, now known as the Port, was Janet Rose. In fact, it's actually, I think, Rose Green Park is, down around Broadway, connecting over to Harvard Street, down just past Columbia, is named for Janet Rose. And she was a real really active, interesting person. Formidable person to be sure. And I think they had a resolution for her. I haven't yet seen there's a revised one that has a little more detail. I'm actually looking forward to reading it because I, you know, you learn a little bit about everybody, but you'll be, you know, when somebody passes away, you actually find yourself learning things you never even knew about people. And so I'm looking forward to that. So anyway, the last thing I want to say here is let's talk a little bit about the city charter. Okay. So in addition to the whole charter review process, and then after that, culminated about a year ago with a report to the city council from the charter review committee. It then fell to the Government Operations Committee, chaired by Paul Toner, and now ultimately to this, the mayor appointed a special committee of the whole to take up the issue of the charter. So they had a meeting in December 9th, where they basically pitched some things that they were not going to move on, moved forward other things. I think they delayed consideration of yet some other things. So I think I may have talked about this at the on the last program. So everybody seems to be okay with reformatting the charter. So I'm not so sure anybody's actually looked at what a formatted charter would actually look like. They want to keep the city manager form. They want to keep proportional representation elections for the city council and school committee elections. They punted on the 16-year-old voting proposal that the Charter Review Committee had wanted for good reason, because I think the state legislature would say, get the hell out of here if you put that in there, as well as even year elections. One of the things that I think was really problematic, and I pointed this out at the subsequent meeting, is that they also pitched, they punted or got rid of, voted down unanimously, proposals for what they call resident assemblies and various mechanisms for citizen, what I like to always call redress of grievances. So that includes things like group petitions, referenda, initiative petitions. Now, there seems to be some belief that somehow that's all guaranteed within state law so that it doesn't have to be in the charter. But and again, I could have a nice conversation with the city solicitor or somebody else about this, but I happen to know that the Plan E charter, which consisted of a certain number of clauses in the Massachusetts General Laws Chapter 43, makes reference to this is about what 15 or 16 clauses. That's the Plan E charter. But that's not the whole Plan E charter. It also refers to another 45 clauses up at the top of the chapter, which includes all of the language having to do with, citizen petition processes. So I believe that the Charter Review Committee, again, could be wrong, basically, like every other city and town in Massachusetts, when they go through a process like this, incorporated those sections of Chapter 43 into their local city charters, right? So that no longer did you reference them as part of this the chapter which has to do with plans A, B, C, D, et cetera, right? The model, the planned, the planned charters, right? So I'm pretty sure the Charter Review Committee recommended moving those things with modifications. One significant change was they wanted to create this thing called resident assemblies, which I do not agree with, at least not the way it was formulated. But that was put into the charter because it was already referenced in part of the Plan E charter. I believe that when the city council said we don't want any of that stuff, they just now we don't have it, we'll have none of it. Now they say, no, it's part of state law. I said, no, I think the part of state law that it was the part that was part of the Plan A, B, C, D charters, And so I really think they need to rethink that because if there are some real deficiencies in the charter, one is I don't think that we have a very good we I don't think we have very good mechanisms for redress of grievances. You can get 1,000 people signing a petition saying, please, 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 city councilors, I implore you to do something about the following thing. And then councilors go, place on file, end right there. Just so there's no way to force a council to revote anything. There's no way to force a council to vote on something initially, an idea. and go on the and be put on the record whether they agree or disagree. And I think it would be a very good thing if there was a way that citizens could force elected officials to go on record rather than sort of playing the little weaselly game, which a lot of them like to do, you know? So I just think it's an important thing that belongs to be explicitly in the charter. Another thing, which I honestly, I only realized this in all sincerity, when I was preparing for this show 2 weeks ago and then said, no, not today. It was that under the Planning Charter, one of the most significant provisions is the section that speaks to interference by the city council going blowing past the city manager and coercing or trying to get department heads to hire their cousin Billy or whatever, you know. So it's not just about personnel. It's basically about blowing past the manager. City council order, what is a city council order as opposed to a resolution? A city council order is the mechanism through which the city council speaks to the manager, a majority speaks to the manager, directing the manager to, through the manager, try to carry out some policy or seek information or whatever it takes into the city departments. City councilors can't just blow past them, except for the purpose of inquiry. That's the phrase that's in there. Well, in the new language that came out of the Charter Review Committee, oh, but let's be clear, the old, original Planning Charter says if you violate this section, not that anybody's ever been prosecuted for it, but if you violate this, it's a fine, jail time, and prohibition from ever serving and working for the city in this position ever again. All right. It was pretty severe. It was a felony. Okay. So as I'm going through the proposed charter, and I, by the way, I've sort of put the whole chart proposal together. You know, I'm not going to link to it here right now, but I have it. There's no penalties at all for it. They just removed them entirely. They basically say, shouldn't do that. Don't blow past the manager, please, pretty please, with sugar on it. Which means, of course, they'll do it. I mean, they already do it to a little bit, but you know, they do it, you know, carefully and quietly and whatever. You know, not all of them, but I certainly know of some instances where it's happened over the years, you know. But you know, if you don't have that kind of a guardrail in there, then you can pretty much guarantee people are going to go blow past it. Okay. Now, I will say one other thing about this, because I spent a lot of time on just trying to understand this charter, even though, you know, people like Siddiqui and Mallon and perhaps Paddy Nolan somehow wanted to prevent me from having any say in any of this. But I think, you know, the prohibition about blowing past the manager is a good thing. But we also need to have some better mechanism via which elected officials can step a little bit over the manager to be a little bit more critical of the department in the presence of the manager. But basically, it shouldn't only be like at the budget hearings where, you know, some department head comes up to the microphone and then city councilors try and harangue them about whether you should be funding this or that or the other thing because they're quietly trying to influence policy, which they can't do directly. So maybe we need something a little bit better for allowing elected officials to step past, but in an organized, legal, purely public, open meeting style way. You know, I mean, you know, speaking personally, I'm not particularly happy with people from the traffic and parking department are just promulgating regulations and formulating policies that they then feed to city councilors, and then it comes back in the form of an ordinance, whether it had to do with Budo or the cycling safety ordinance or things like that. You know, I think there it would we would be better off if there was at least some mechanisms for, you know, getting a little bit more back and forth within the departments than we currently have here. All right, so kind of winding it down here, at the tw January 27th meeting, there was a proposal for to give the city council the ability to increase any city budget by 10%, and also then reducing budgets, you know, so they could basically be reallocating. boy, the city staff came through like champs, and they explained, look, do you realize how very little discretionary money we have here? So the only part of that 10% is really more like 50% that, of the discretionary funds that you would then be able to, and we wouldn't know. It would be total chaos in the budgeting process because you wouldn't know whether, five city councilors, at the behest of some advocacy group wanted to just upend everything on the, budget night or during the budget hearings, so that got tanked. Thankfully, they also want to have the city solicitor be appointed by the city council. That would be a huge mistake. The city solicitor said, look, if you want to have it, the city manager hires a city solicitor subject to council approval, maybe that would be okay. But even that, I don't think would be particularly a great idea. The proposal have a directly elected mayor. They're still talking about that. They'll be back for another meeting on February 13th to try and talk about that. Since the mayor doesn't really run the city, the whole idea about having a directly elected mayor is silly. It's sort of like a city council president, just like Boston. The council chooses their own chair. What's wrong with that? There was a proposal to go from 2-year terms to 4-year terms, staggered. So you would elect five in one cycle, two for another cycle. And then the one with the five would also be when you would elect the mayor. So the people who were elected during the 2-year cycle would not be eligible to run for mayor or whatever. And anyway, it was so flawed. I mean, it was honestly the city councilors, I believe four city councilors who were supporting that, or at least three of them, honestly should hang their head in shame. They didn't think it through at all. And I'd explained this at least a little bit back in the December meeting, but they don't listen to me. So what the heck? Anyway, so that went down. There was, so we'll see what happens when we come to meet again on February 13th, which is not too far off. So anyway, that's coming up here. All right. So anyway, I'll sort of leave it at that. I think it's fair to say. Part of me almost wants to start talking like everybody else in the country about what's happening at the national level, Trump and RFK Jr. and Tulsi Gabbard, but all that business here. But honestly, I'm just watching it and hoping not too much damage is done. I'm an evolutionary kind of person, not a revolutionary kind of person, so I don't like doing things this way anyway. But I also don't suffer from Trump derangement syndrome either. So I'm just watching and waiting. We'll see what goes. So anyway, we'll see you again soon on Cambridge Inside Out.